road is long, with many a winding turn, that leads us to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and on this week's show, we'll be psych rocking ourselves up for a chat with Austin's White Denim. Tim Jones will join us for Singles Club and music from Girls, Wild Beasts and the Black Eyed Peas. We'll have the best of your face back and we'll tell you all about our plans for Glastonbury. But first, pull up a nice coffin and make yourself comfortable. It's time to meet the horrors. That was Who Can Say by The Horrors. Our first guest this week. Most of you will know the story by now. 2 years ago, The Horrors were the most hyped band in Britain. Their punchy garage rock, 15-minute live sets, and carefully crafted Undertaker chic, making them the talk of the town. Until everyone stopped talking about them and started offering them out for being frauds instead. Then, in 2009, they came back with an album, Primary Colours, that seduced the same moaners all over again. Produced by Jeff Barrow, it went off in a new direction marked shoegazy, or big kraut. All of which brings us to the back room of a London venue earlier this month. With The Horrors basking in the critical reception to Primary Colours. I say basking, I mean it's not like they've got a tan or anything. And about to head out on tour for the rest of the year, I caught up with bassist Rhys Webb to talk about their return from the dead. We started by discussing their recent trip to North America and an unlikely night in Mexico.
It's just been amazing, really. We've ended up in Mexico after our 5 weeks in America, and then we went to do our own show in Mexico, and we sold out a 3,000-person capacity place down there, and it was just the most insane show I think we've probably ever played. We arrived outside the venue, and the whole of the streets were lined with people, and then we noticed that there was these market stalls, and we thought, what the hell is that all about? And we looked, and it's like, it was bootleg horrors merchandise, but there wasn't one. There was about 10 of these independent like stalls that these old guys were looking after. There was like horrors bumper stickers, posters like saying it was our world tour that started in Mexico. And then it was, like, the next date was Glasgow and Newcastle or whatever. But it was one of the best shows we've played. I mean, we played Sea Within a Sea, which was the first track we released. And it was the first time that literally the audience were singing louder than we were playing.
You have quite a touchy-feely crowd, a wild crowd. But yet, you know, the image of The Horrors that's consistent over these two albums is a kind of one of perhaps of studied diffidence. Why do you think that creates such passion in your fans?
I think we're very passionate people, and I just think there's not really many bands that have the same interest as us. I think it was quite kind of frustrating first time around that some people actually did just see, you know, a load of haircuts and an eyeliner or whatever. And it was kind of took us by surprise almost. But, you know, I think now with this record, people can hear exactly what we're trying to do. But I don't know. I think bands are so kind of disposable now. And they seem to be coming across in interviews with, you know, these kind of statements of wanting to take over the world and be the next U2 or whatever. And that's something we have no interest in being at all. But I just don't believe them for a second.
Was that kind of stupid building up and knocking down thing that went on with the first? It's very much the case that you've come back and being seen to be doing what you want to do regardless of what people think.
It's funny because the album, for the first album, actually got really great reviews, really favorable reviews, and I think it's one of those weird things. It's like, one, you know, it's kind of history has almost been written that we were the worst band in the world and suddenly we've kind of gone good. But you know, when we had started, we'd been together for a few months and we were just playing primitive punk rock, and that's all we knew how to do and that's what we wanted to do. But for us, there was never a question of moving forwards, and I think this record is just the next step.
We'll be right back. this album is a lot richer, it's a lot bigger, it's in scope, in sound and in ambition.
I think it's a really natural kind of organic growth, really. You know, as simple as we started playing with different instruments. Me and Tom started a project called Spider and the Flies, which is completely electronic, and that very much fed through. And that, I mean, even just listening to a lot more electronic music was definitely inspiring.
What sort of stuff were you listening to?
Well, we discovered we were into the kind of tracks, acid house stuff that we kind of been listening to for a while, but we discovered the kind of early sounds of Detroit, Juan Atkins, and the Metroplex label, and basically early techno, which is, you know, just as much Kraftwerk as it is American electro or the New York electro kind of thing. And I think it's just the idea of rhythm and sound, actually. We've always been really interested in sound, and even first time round, I mean, it was kind of a barrage of noise and feedback and distortion and fuzz, but really now it's this kind of idea of sonic communication. I really like the idea of sound being a really visual thing that you are a part of and you can hear. I can never give you just what you deserve. We recorded in the summer last year, and it was kind of like a studio was about 10 minutes away from all of our houses, and we'd be walking there in the morning, and it was just a really amazing space. We kind of had our own world there, and we just spent, you know, months having as much of a party as we were playing in there, and we kind of felt that there was something happening, something exciting happening in the sound, and it really just felt like, you know, the room was spinning round or whatever, and we felt that was really important to capture.
So are you saying that the pasty-faced horrors were inspired by the balmy warmth of summer?
Yeah, completely. I mean, no, we never said we weren't in the first place. We never claimed to be dark goth characters. We were kind of very much into the darker side of punk. But we'd always been into blissed out psychedelia, and we were pretty much blissed out when we were making it. And there was kind of a sense of euphoria and very kind of celestial kind of sounds that we were kind of throwing around, and it was really exciting to be doing it.
So tell us about Jeff Barrow. What did he bring to the process? I hear he was a kind of a limiter or a stripper downer of layers.
We met him when we played at ATP, and they were playing third for the first time. There was so much in third that was so important to us. I don't know, there's like the Silver Apples thing and the kind of Morricone thing and the very rhythmic thing. And people kind of think, oh, the horrors and Portishead, what a strange idea. But Jeff and most people we actually respect knew what we were about. What we found as well is that we didn't want to then work with a producer, kind of a stuffy producer in a stuffy studio who works with the same desk every day, using the same tricks, knows the sound inside out. And the thing we found that was cool was the fact that we were actually thought working with him, it would turn everything we'd written into something else. Mm. Just, you know, maybe bits of arrangement or taking it elsewhere, like sonically. But Jeff was completely opposed to us changing any of it, really, and what he wanted us to do was to not to take it too far, because what he heard was very much the raw kind of, you know, sound of what happened, and he really thought that was enough.
Internet and what internet has done for modern music is not something you're huge fans of.
I just think it has good points and bad points. I just think for me, I come from a place of, you know, searching out and wanting to find, kind of reading about, like going through records, finding out who's on that one, looking for another one. And I don't know, I mean, in some ways it's like, you know, to find something at touch of a button is a great thing. So I'm not actually 100% against that. I just think it's to have everything at your fingertips just takes away a lot of the magic. You know, even the idea of kind of going to get an album on a Monday morning for the first time, then you go home and you'd be reading sleeve notes, looking at the pictures, spend the whole day lost in that album. I do buy records on eBay because people don't even bloody take the records to the shops to sell them anymore. You can only buy them on eBay. But yeah, I'd prefer to spend my time away from a computer, to be honest.
That's technophobe Reese Webb of The Horrors. Primary Colours is out right now on XL, and the band will be back in the UK to play Glastonbury next weekend. All of which serves as a handy segue to introduce my fellow podders this week, Rosie Swash and Tim Jones. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Tim, you're editor of The Guardian's music site. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thanks.
And as such, you're going to be heading up the coverage from Worthy Farm this weekend.
That is true. That's all we've been worrying about all week.
I was going to say you must be extremely excited, but no, you're worried.
Yeah, I'm stressed out of my mind.
That's an indie state of being, isn't it? Just one to, you know.
Constant worry, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us, what can our listeners, I mean, we'll be doing some podcasts.
Well, obviously there'll be the news, the reviews, the blogs, the podcasts. You know, you take that for a given these days, don't you? That's right.
But it's de facto.
We'll also be adding an interactive component as well. There'll be a map, a special interactive map where you can see reviews and things popping up all over it, sort of in various areas of the site with different content throughout the
weekend. So if you want to see what contents come from the sacred stone circle, you'd be able to kind of mouse over.
Pretty much, yeah. There'll also be a lot of Twitter, a huge amount of Twitter.
Very good. Maybe we'll kind of usurp Iran election as the trending topic.
I hope so. That's my aim. That's my
direct
competitor.
Rosie, you go first in this week's singles club, which we're going to start right now. And maybe you could even announce the tune you have chosen.
I have chosen Hooting and Howling by Wild Beasts.
Let's get into it right now.
Carry me hooting and howling to the river to wash off my hands of the hot blood, the sweat and the sand. Any rival who goes for our girls will be left thumb soaking in terror and bereft of a coffin bearers.
That's Hooting and Howling by Wild Beasts. Wild Beasts hail from Kendal in the Lake District, home of Kendal Mint Cake and its less successful sister product, Kendal Parsley Cake. The band are purveyors of literate, eccentric rock music. So much so, in fact, that the Fratellis have sworn to murder them. Rosie.
I think the Fratellis could probably have the Wild Beasts, but then I would happily kill the Fratellis in return.
Just setting off a huge spiral of revenge.
Yeah, that's all I've got to say about it now. Tim and I were discussing the Wild Beasts yesterday with someone who works from Domino, their label, and saying that we think that this album is... I was saying that I think this album is less wacky than their first one, Limbo Panto, and more genuinely weird. I think the first minute of this song just feels so creepy and weird when you listen to it, but in a way that is really addictive to go back to. Hayden Thorpe's falsetto is also, he uses it like an instrument in this song. He increases it as the music gets louder. It's dexterous rather than theatrical for the sake of it. I do like the way that they play around with alliteration in English language, because it took me a while to realise what they're actually singing about is the kind of male pack mentality that often pops up in music. You know, everyone from them to the Arctic Monkeys has done it in totally different ways, and they've painted this picture lyrically. It's almost mythical. You know, there's a line we say, I'm not saying the lads are always deserve a braying. I'm not saying the girls are worth the fines we're paying. And it takes a while for that to come out, because the style of the music and his singing is so the opposite end of that spectrum. I just think it's really fantastic.
Interesting. Tim, speaking as the journalist who found them or something like that, you wrote like the second ever piece in print about them. How have you seen their development musically?
Well, I'm a big fan, but I have to say this album doesn't really move on that much, I don't think. It's not like, wow, they've really changed their sound. I think they can get away with it because no one else sounds like them and no one else has that voice. So I think they can get away with that, and that's fine. I like the song. I think there's better ones on the new album. But I do think that the secret, like Rosie said, is to look at the lyrics. And they're always really, really odd and quite disturbing. And this one, it reminds me of Clockwork Orange a bit. Mm. There's a lyric that says, courting him in fisticuffing waltz, which I think is a lovely way of describing a scrap. It's very kind of, you know, it's like a ballet or something, isn't it? It's brilliant. And I just think it's a great way of talking about, you know, like a load of people kicking someone in on the streets. It's not
and yet. I suppose that the kind of the disjuncture between those lyrics and the way he performs, which is... On the first album, the the falsetto almost seemed to be used more as an effect, because he has a wide range, wide vocal range, and he can play it quite low as well. But this is the first song I've heard of theirs when it's explicitly falsetto all the way through. And I have to say, it kind of lost me as a result. I like the theatricality of the first album. That's what one of the things that dragged me in. And I think if you aren't prepared to give it the time that will allow you to immerse yourself in it and find those lyrics, like you say, I think it might kind of, this one just might skirt over the surface a little bit.
I thought it was an odd choice for a single. Nothing grabbed me about the song, to be honest, but that's just me.
Yeah, but I mean, we're all fans of the Wild Beasts around here, and long may they hoot and howl. You can listen to that on the Wild Beasts website right now, can't you, Rosie? The hooting and howling.
And on the MySpace as well.
You can watch the video on our site.
you said
go to the MySpace and hear the song.
Go to guardian.co.uk/music right now. Tim, we were talking about this beforehand, and Tim said, oh, I'll probably forget to mention that. I said, oh, don't worry, I won't. And lo and behold, completely the other way around. Okay, so guardian.co.uk/music is the place for the video. Next up on Singles Club is Boom Boom Pow, the remix by the Black Eyed Peas. I'm the biggie black max bedroom foul. Download the world but you do desktop now. Games of love was bugging off our boom boom style. Sexy ladies saying that they like that. That was the Black Eyed Peas with their remix of Boom Boom Pow. As well as being responsible for the global economic downturn and the return of tuberculosis, Black Eyed Peas are a pop hip-hop group from the United States of America. They are currently number 2 in the charts with this track, in which they claim to be So 3008, which, if nothing else, paints a terribly desolate view of the future. Now, I have chosen this one, and I've obviously kind of, you know, I'm supposed to go on and say nice things about this now, and I've just gone and been rude about them. So, you know, generally, I don't like the Black Eyed Peas, and this tune I kind of pick as much as a point of interest as anything else. I do really like the beginning, and hopefully you'll have heard there's a guest rap from Curtis 50 Cent, it's kind of a little bit, it's very different from the original, and different because, basically, it's a Will.i.am remix, but he's kind of just ripped off dubstep and put it under his track. Now, I think this is interesting because the baton, it marks a progression of the baton, or handing over the baton again for who's making this kind of future pop sound. Because, I mean, Timbaland and his reinvention of R&B really kind of put pop moved it a lot further forward in the early part of this decade. But then it kind of went back to Europe again, I think, through the Ed Banger, the Just East thing. And this tune in its original was more interesting than a lot of kind of poppy R&B had been for a while. And it managed to knock off Bonkers from number one, which is one of my favourite tracks. And I didn't even mind that much when it did. But this is the first instance I've heard of an American hip-hop R&B producer putting dubstep under a hip-hop and R&B tune. It's classic dubstep with the beat and the kind of skittering beat and the wobbling bass line, and I think it's really effective here. So in a way, I think they've stolen the baton back by copying what we were doing in the first place, but putting it in a slightly different context. I won't mention that on the Fergie bits it goes into a horrible Euro house backing. We'll just concentrate on the dubstep element instead. Rosie?
Actually, that bit did remind me of Bonkers, the way they not to put anything down on Bonkers because I like it as a song, but the way that it jumps around, I think that this song is a vast improvement on the original, which is the one that actually went to number one, and I don't even like this song that much, which tells you what I think about
the original. Execrable.
I just it would have been all right if they had missed out the lyrics, which you're obviously so proud of I'm so 3008 and you're so late. It just, you're 2008, which is just like, you're not though. That is the whole point of the Black Eyed Peas, is everything that they did that was ever interesting about 10 years ago, they stopped doing to make a buck. And then they just started thinking, how can we become like globally quite big? Well, let's take a bit of this from South America and da-da-da. I just hate them so much. I hate them.
I mean, I hate them too, but it's clever what they do, because it's not about sound. I mean, I'm sure if this gets any response on the blog at all, it will be to say how derivative the Black Eyed Peas are. But what they do is slightly to get the derivative sound that's just going to be everybody else's derivative sound in about 6 weeks. They're just slightly ahead of that, and they turn it into a huge pop thing. And I just think it's very interesting that they've decided that dubstep is now something that can be marketed in that way. Tim?
I agree with that, that I find it weird that I was very surprised when I saw dubstep connected with it. And I just thought I thought they wouldn't have even really been on their radar. I don't know. Did you think that? I just thought...
Well, I presume they must do, because they're always looking for things to nick.
Okay. I mean, I've never really seen them as that forward-thinking, though. It's always more kind of a bit gimmicky to me.
It'd be like the Zeitgeist tapes in The Thick of It, where somebody goes and gets a kind of CD or, you know, a mix and gives it to Will.i.am and says, here's all the interesting stuff I found on the internet. And he gives it a cursory listen and goes, oh, yeah, give me some more of that.
But that's what I heard about them. Every song that they write sounds like they've done it in about 30 seconds. You know, it just sounds so, they're so non-committed to it in any way.
Well, that's a real, but that's a real skill. To be able to make huge records at the turn of a, at the spin of a spin of a hat and the drop of a cane, whatever that is. I don't know. I've just got an image of Will.i.am wearing a top hat.
That just confirms that I believe that Black Eyed Peas make music that people who don't like music like.
That's right. Moving on.
But this is different because this is a 50 Cent remix.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't really spoken about that.
No, yet. You could say the same about 50 Cent, really, because I think a lot of his... A lot of the kind of, if you look at this, it's all over the place online, this video, and if you look at a lot of the comments, most of them are saying about how 50 Cent's career is over. Anyway, the Boom Boom Power remix is all over the internet right now, including YouTube's. Final track on Singles Club is Hell Hole Rat Race by Girls. Sometimes, darling, you just need someone. That was Girls with Hellhole Rat Race. Girls, confusingly, are two men from San Francisco. To make the name even less accurate, neither member cross-dresses, though one does paint their nails. The band are to release their debut album later this year, but have pledged that if they ever get as far as releasing their fourth, they'll change the band's name to Women. Tim.
Is that a true fact, or is that one of your
made
gags?
Made up fact. Made up fact. Second fact, always made up, and the first one quite often is too.
It was a good one. Why do I like this? I've got so many reasons why I like this. They're my favourite band in the world at the moment. Absolutely love them. I always have one favourite, and these are mine. I think, let's start with where they're from. I think they really sum up San Francisco, just in their sound, just in, like, if you look at the videos, and I should mention that the video is on our website.
it is.
Exactly. But, I mean, this video in particular is brilliant because it just captures a night out in San Francisco, and I just think it goes with the sound so well. Another reason I love them, they have that idea of how to write a perfect classic pop song, which kind of descends from a lot of California acts from... You know, like the Beach Boys, I guess, or people who've been influenced by the Beach Boys, like Elvis Costello. And I also think they sum up perfectly what it is to be a kind of a teenager, even though they're not teenagers anymore. I think they have that innocent, naive quality. And the lyrics, you know, or I mean, written down, it sounds a bit rubbish. You know, I don't want to cry my whole life through. I want to do some laughing too. It's always, you know, really simple, basic, almost, you know, laughable sixth form poetry, but I just think it goes so well with the music and his voice, and he manages to sum up something quite, I don't know, just teenage and angsty, which really well. And this one sounds a bit like Spiritualized as well.
It does have that dreamy quality to it. Do you know what it also makes me think of? Las Vegas. Totally makes me think of...
It has the shoegazy big orchestra.
It does. Yeah. Interesting. Rosie?
I like it. I don't really know very much about them compared to what Tim was just saying there. And I think what you said about them being naive kind of hits on what I do like about them. You can't ever underestimate how appealing it can be when a band are genuine, to have a real genuine innocence about them, because it's such a hard thing to put across without seeming contrived, and I do feel like it's really genuine with them. None of their songs have really massively grabbed me. I think they're missing a few hooks, and I absolutely hate it when people say it's a summery pop song, but it is a really summery song. It's very coastal. All the things that you were saying about it sounding like it's from San Francisco, it has that very, very languid quality, which is appealing. But it just, for me, it's just like maybe missing a certain thing to make me really love them. Then I've never really liked the Beach Boys that much. Sacrilege, it's not true. I know. Be gone from the studio.
There's actually there was a post on the Reader's Recommend Spill blog, which is just they've been listening to Pet Sounds.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all kind of saying how that this album, you listen to it and all of a sudden very few of them are moved by it. But I think that's an interesting, the point you make and the point you make about the classic pop song and then being able to make a song which is kind of a miserable song. It's about being sad, but make it sound summery and up. Mm-hmm. It's a classic pop trait too, I suppose. Mm. Okay, that's Girls, and that is Hellhole Rat. Blah. That's Girls with Hellhole Rat Race, and it's out in July. We're not quite sure of the specifics of that, but it is out next month. Comments, yours, on the blog last week with regards to singles, what we reviewed. Bass Monkey, I didn't think Magnolia Electric Company sounded all that strong. The voice especially. You can go to Priscilla Arne's MySpace and work your way through her top friends and find much better songs. I half expected him to rhyme Josephine with mine at the beginning, so I suppose that would be Josephine.
It would
have to be.
As for Jay-Z, this is still Bass Monkey. As for Jay-Z, the whole auto-tune thing reminds me of the primary school playground when suddenly some kid comes in one day and says, such and such isn't cool anymore, and something else is cool. And then everyone gets very excited and a scramble ensues to get with a new trend. It's all a bit silly, but then so is most chart hip-hop. I've got nothing against hip-hop, honestly. I'm like Rosie, I know Snoop Dogg's style is sexist, for example, but it's a great record and has a sense of humour. But a lot of it, to be honest, if I want to hear something to... Sorry.
Yeah, that.
All right.
Sorry.
Should I just leave it?
Probably not, actually. Reading it again, sorry.
But a lot of it, to be honest, if I want to hear someone talking about themselves, I can call my mother.
That's funny, because when I speak to my mother, it's always me talking. She always listens, and then I realise I get to the end of the call, and it's like, oh, I haven't even asked my mum how she is. What are your calls to your mother like, Tim? Anyway, moving on. We want your reviews of this week's tracks, Wild Beast, Black Eyed Peas and Girls, on our blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Tell us what you reckon about them and these other tracks that are out to buy next week. Okay, Bat for Lashes, Pearl's Dream. Basement Jacks, Raindrop. Kerry Hilson, Knock You Down. Florence and the Machine, Rabbit Heart. Okay, that's this week's montage. Thank you very much, Tim Jones, for coming in and joining us on Singles Club today.
Absolutely no problem at all. I'd like to come back.
I'm sure we can arrange that. And we'll see you on the fields of Pilton.
You will.
For lots of tweeting about how compass mentis we all are,
yes,
doing our job properly. Okay, right, that's it for this week's Singles Club. You can catch the texticular version on the website guardian.co.uk/music, as well as loads of videos from all the bands you love on Wednesdays. Next on Music Weekly, though, we have A Touch of White Denim. That's Let's Talk About It by White Denim. That's one of my favourite tracks of last year, don't you know? Recorded by the Austin, Texas three-piece, who, like the White Stripes, make a lot more noise than they should do given their numbers. The band released their debut last year, but they've already returned with another, which starts off at garage rock and goes off in several other directions, usually in the same song. They're coming to the UK for the festival season, but I spoke to Josh Block, drummer and owner of the band's recording space, i.e. his caravan, in Austin this week. We started by discussing their prodigious output and how they decided to release another album this year.
Well, we had the music, and James writes quite a bit. So, you know, it was less of a marketing decision and more of just the band's decision. We just whined and griped until they allowed us to go ahead and release the music as soon as possible. We were already playing a few of the songs live, and it just felt awkward holding stuff back.
Right. Because
And we're actually already halfway through the next one now.
I spoke to you at Glastonbury last year, and I remember you were quite clear to point out that you were a party band, you made party music. Did some of that party edge come off this time around?
Not really. We just had to learn how to do it 5 days a week, which I think just pacing ourselves was the best way to learn how to do it. No drinking before five, things like that. So.
In the morning or the afternoon?
In the afternoon. We work, when we're not on tour, we still work 5 to 6 days a week. So, you know, if we started drinking every day, probably wouldn't be having this phone conversation right now.
Your studio is your caravan, is that right?
True, it's a Spartan Imperial mansion.
Does that mean it's quite high up the range?
It is, and you know, I think in 1952 it was probably the best you could get. I've built a bed that the top flips up and becomes my drum riser. So I think I have about, I'd say, 10 square feet of personal space now.
Are there any special acoustic functions that you've managed to kind of set up inside the caravan?
The use of the bathroom now is really nice to have. We've got a little short reverb chamber that we can use a bit, and you know, I have a toy piano in there under the sink.
Ah. Does the keyboard under the sink sound differently from how it would if it was above the sink?
Yes, it definitely sounds a little different under the sink, and it's a little easier to reach from the toilet, to tell you the truth. Some of my best ideas come around at that point. I'm glad I have a toy piano sitting right there.
What are the differences for you musically between the two albums?
Production techniques have definitely gotten better, and that's taking into account the way that the process has affected kind of the arrangement and how the tunes come about. Mm-hmm. It's offered us the ability to really attack the tunes even quicker now. So the songs are a little more natural, I think, because of that.
It also seems, as you were saying it earlier, that it's kind of your influences are coming from lots of different places, but it seems like they're coming from even more places than on Workout Holiday. There's a point where you're playing dub reggae percussion in there.
We haven't stopped in Humboldt County in between playing San Francisco and Seattle, or San Francisco and Portland, Oregon, and that's a 10-hour drive. Wow. So that's 10 hours just to really listen to music and talk about what we're listening to. So having that opportunity to be in a van together, you know, I can play all three Funkadelic records on a drive, and we can sit with Steve and talk about it and freak out about the parts that really interest us. And Steve can hear where we're coming from with that music. And the reverse goes with some of like the Pere Ubu or Minutemen influences that Steve brings to the groove.
Could you tell us a little bit about the song Regina Holding Hands, which is one of my favorites on the album?
Sonically, it's coming from that Tommy James and the Shondells stuff. the later work that they did. As far as the content goes, I guess it's dealing with relationships, but relationships as mirrors to yourself. So it's kind of this, the idea of looking at all relationships selfishly, as though they're a way to improve yourself. You eventually realize what you've been doing to everybody, and that's using them as like a, I guess like a backboard.
Yeah, maybe.
Wow, this is getting this is like a, should I pay you by the hour for this?
Well, I was going to say my rates are reasonable. I'd like to show another side of my concern for your welfare now. I saw you recently in London, and you powered along at 110 miles an hour throughout. Are you ever worried that somebody's going to collapse or have a stroke from, you know, hitting things too fast, too hard?
Almost the exact year from this week, we came in and we played an in-store at Sister Ray.
Yeah.
And that was directly after getting off the flight. We had 18 hours of travel. And then 3 hours later, we played an in-store at Sister Ray. And we actually did have one of those situations where it was a bit too much. Luckily, we got through the set, and we only left one song off the end. But James slept 0 hours on the flight over. So I think he'd been up for, 28, 30 hours. You know, since then, we don't. We're not really worried about it. We drink a lot of water. We're all kind of healthy people.
Does it keep you fit, I wonder, just like practicing? I mean, particularly for you, thumping those skins endlessly.
That and Powerball, to tell you the truth. I've been getting into Powerball.
That's Josh Block of White Denim, and Fitz is out on Full Time Hobby Records on June the 22nd. It's a good one too. Feature with no name time now, and this week's entry comes from Paul Simon. Yes, the multi-platinum selling artist. No, not really. It's Paul Simon who works on the Observer Review, but he's a big fan of the feature, and he pitched us Todd Rundgren.
Hello.
Todd Rundgren. Name doesn't ring a bell? Well, to be honest, I'm not that surprised, since he only had one UK hit single in 1973, and his best-of collection was entitled Go Ahead, Ignore Me. But his distinctive brand of pop, soul, rock has many fans, chief among them the pop whiz kid Prince, to whom he's been compared in terms of inventiveness and virtuosity, and some of today's rising stars such as Hot Chip, who sampled one of Todd's records in last year's Shake a Fist. Todd Rundgren's career began in 1967 with the Philadelphia psychedelic pop band Nas. They parted company after 3 albums. Todd went solo and has never looked back since, notching up more than 40 albums and one acknowledged masterwork, Something Anything, which some say is like a white sign of the times. The key to exploring the Rundgren phenomenon is that there are 3 shades of Todd. First, you've got the lovely harmonies and masterly key changes of pop ballad Todd.
We've been through hell together.
Then there's the crashing guitar riffs of rock Todd.
Might as well stop yourself, you'll only throw it away.
And then, for the really keen, there's the cosmic prog rock Todd. You get the picture. Actually, his band Utopia only did a couple of prog albums before going all pop, so don't get put off. What excites today's electropop explorers is that Todd Rundgren is a restless innovator. Solo albums like 1978's Hermit of Mink Hollow feature him playing every instrument from drums to saxophone. His 1985 album, A Cappella, features just his voice and musical backing constructed from vocal samples. And lastly, he's a pretty good recording engineer too. One track on the first Utopia album lasted over 30 minutes, which for all you diginauts unfamiliar with vinyl is a big achievement. That skill made him in demand as a producer, and among the fruits of those labours are Meatloaf's monster-selling Bat Out of Hell, the New York Dolls' first album and their latest two, plus quirky gems from Steve Hillage to Patti Smith. Songwriting is in Todd Rundgren's blood, and he's still bringing new albums out every couple of years. Some pop, some rock, all worth a listen. Give him a go. See the light.
Can't you see the light in my eyes?
That was Paul Simon with a feature with no name. Faceback, Rosie.
Alberto Lopez Tovar and Thomas Helgeson gave last week's show the thumbs up on Facebook, you know, that old gizmo that you can do, while Gustavo Miranda said, really, really enjoyed the last pod. Just here to say thanks for the show, in capital letters. Great source for new music for those in countries where Britney is the standard. You guys rock. Cheers from Ecuador.
I'm sure she'll have loved to hear a bit of Black Eyed Peas this week then. And Mozwork wrote, thanks for the Dear Honda piece. Didn't realise that blog debate a few months ago over the single would lead to you getting them on. Great stuff. Bradford Cox, a talented, prolific and really nice guy.
Samson Hill said, this was probably the best podcast I could possibly have wanted to tune into right now. Deer Hunter are one of my favourite bands in the world at the moment, and the Microcastle album is the shiz. Casting all the negatives that surround them, they are an inspiration to many who love their collective genius, a band for all a band's bands.
And that just doesn't make sense. A band for all a band's bands.
I don't know.
So we just add another bands in there.
Bands for bands who love bands, bands.
Great. So you can post comments on this week's blog. And maybe Samson Hill, we've done you an injustice there, but I'm sure you can come back and explain yourself on this week's blog. You can tell us also what you made of White Denim and the Horrors. And all you need to do that is go to guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Right, we're going to be back next week umpteen times from Glastonbury. We'll be delivering three over the course of the weekend. Hope you can join us then. But until that time, Rosie Swash, it's been great.
As always, it's been great too.
And we'll speak to you soon. Bye.